place to go. No place to go.
Good Thursday morning to you. The Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. First glimpse of the sunrise out the window of the Skyline Studio, high atop 303 Wacker here on WGN Radio. Dave Ennett, G is here. Super Joe and Vivian on the other side of the glass. Steve Grzanich in the newsroom. Mary Vandeveld in Traffic Central. How's everybody this morning on Thursday?
Just fantastic. Are you seeing the sun, Dave? I'm seeing
the sky getting bright.
Yeah, you know that
the sun causes that, Mary.
Yeah, it happens like instantly. Like you, it's dark, and then like you notice all of a sudden the sun is out. It's glorious. It's fabulous. We're all going to have a wonderful day, right, Dave?
It's going to be a great day.
Yeah, we're going to hear about your last night in a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little bit harrowing,
right? A little dicey last night.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You were up by, Deerfield.
Yeah.
Well, guess what, guys? Steve Cochran has given a stamp of approval to me to start the Top 6 at 6.
Oh. From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Don't
get your kicks. With the Top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
So here we go. The Supreme Court cleared the way for the Trump administration's rule that dramatically limits the ability of Central American migrants to claim asylum to go into effect nationwide while the appeals process plays out. Wednesday's order is a major victory for the administration, which argued the rule was necessary to screen out asylum seekers who declined to request protection at the first opportunity. Next, at least 2,500 people have been registered as missing in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian. The Bahamas government said Wednesday as it confirmed that oil from tanks damaged by the storm has spread along the coast of Grand Bahama. The National Emergency Management Agency became aware of the oil spill as soon as it was able to fly over Grand Bahama and alerted the Norwegian company Equinor that owns and manages the facility. We're not surprised by this at all, are we, Steve Grzanich? We knew that initial numbers would go way up.
Yeah, they've been warning about it, and there's some people who even think it's going to be higher than 2,500, that many of these 2,500 are probably dead and buried in rubble, but that, you know, they're preparing people there for even worse than that. So
wow. Yeah. Oh my goodness, so awful. All right, next. General Motors is recalling more than 3.4 million big pickup trucks and SUVs in the U.S. to fix a brake problem. Anybody here have a big pickup truck?
I do not.
Dave, I would think you would have one.
No, I've never owned a pickup. Although I like them, I admire them, but I've never had one.
I could totally see Mary having a pickup.
My husband does.
I could see you tooling around town in a giant pickup, though.
It's fun to drive them. It is, once you get up there.
Once you get in one, it's a lot of fun, because then you're like, I own the road.
You got to have the rim to help you get up, the foot thing, and then you have to have the granny getter outer to help you get out.
Well, listen, if you are driving one of these pickup trucks or SUVs, the recall covers the Chevrolet Silverado and GMC Sierra 1500, 2500, and 3500. Is that enough numbers for you? Those are the actual series of the pickups from 2014 through 2018 model years. Also included are the Cadillac Escalade from 2015 to 2017 and the GMC Yukon and Chevy Suburban and Tahoe from 2015 through 2018. Now, if I am not mistaken, Mr. Steve Cochran drives a big Chevrolet SUV, I think.
It's Tahoe, yeah.
Yeah.
What about it?
There's a brake problem, sir. You've got to get it fixed.
Nope, my brake's fixed. My brake's
really
fixed.
From 2015 to 2018.
I have a 2017 Chevy Tahoe White Lightning. My brakes are fine.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Because I just used them.
Well, okay, but they could be bad and go any time, so you better get them fixed.
No, they're fine.
Okay.
Everybody else should deal with this. I'm good.
Well, yeah, you're... Wow, someone's feeling really invincible.
Well, you can't say we didn't warn you.
When I was 16, I left a driver ed class, went home, and I told my mother, who was worried about me driving too fast, I said, I'm not going to get in an accident. Because I was 16, I knew. Next day, after driver ed class, I hit a road sign. like spun out, little gravel just off the edge of the road, spun out, hit the road sign. I remember the road sign flying through the air, majestically spinning through the air. The road sign actually passed the car and then stabbed itself into the lawn of somebody's house.
Oh, my God. So when they woke up in the morning, there was a sign.
You know the problem? That was not a Tahoe. Tahoe's fine.
Well.
Okay. Hey, lightning.
All the other cars, good luck. Super Earth, about 111 light years away. Best candidate for habitability. Steve, how long is it going to take us to get there?
About a million years.
Oh, fantastic.
These stories that, you know,
I mean, we got to leave now.
Well, but, you know, I love space stories and I'm a space geek, but these stories just kill me because there's no way ever where we're going to get to one of these places unless we find a wormhole or some sort of, you know.
But what do you know about this black hole that's eating the universe and might eat us?
The black hole will probably get us before we can get to this planet.
There's two black holes that have been discovered that are consuming parts of the universe, and there's a concern that one black hole is close to us. How long do we have?
That's a good question.
I mean, through the weekend?
I think we have a couple million years.
Oh, okay.
All we have to do is figure out warp speed, right? Like...
No, and even then, warp speed, I think, would take a long time. There's a lot of things we've got to figure out
so
about.
So we got no shot.
Well, I don't want to say we have no shot, but we need to start thinking about how we're going to do this. We humans have to be able to survive the...
What about Star Trek beam me up thing? Would that work?
Maybe, I don't know, unless maybe there's also... I think the wormhole is probably our best bet if somehow we're able to do that.
How about a carpool lane? If we had a carpool lane directly to this planet? Like if everybody got in one rocket... Or if you didn't take it. Like, here's the problem in space. You get some selfish dude flying a rocket by himself. Mm-hmm. If everybody would just team up and be in rockets, then we could save some time.
Yeah.
Doesn't save any time at all.
No.
Traveling at the speed of light will be impossible, I think, for humans. So it's
because we'd die?
We would die, yes.
Well, I'm back to Star Trek, then. You got to beat me up. See, would you drop the news this morning and just work on that plan?
Yes.
Sure, I'm on it.
GameStop's closing up to 200 stores. Video game sales have plummeted. Well, because you don't go and get like a hard copy video.
Just download it now.
No. I mean, I know that. With all the time I spend playing Fortnite. I played Fortnite, Five Nights, Six Nights. I play all of them.
Yeah. Online, right?
That's why you don't go to bed.
You got the headset on.
Dave, I believe it's called On the Line.
On the Line.
Yeah, On the Line. On the Internet.
But I remember taking my son's video game. You probably did this with your kids. You took the cartridges to GameStop, and they could turn them in and pick out something new that was used.
It was the Blockbuster of video games.
Yes,
and then
it was.
You'd get no money back for most of them, but you tried.
By the way, if you have a lot of old hard copy cassettes, video game cassettes, definitely hold on to them because they're not worth anything. So just hold on to them as long as you possibly can.
To take up space.
Yeah, I've got some. Listen, there's a much larger set of closings expected in the next 2 years than the GameStop chain is trying to figure out how, in fact, they're going to stay in business. The Texas-based retailer has about 3,800 stores in the U.S. and 140 in Illinois alone. That's a lot.
I know. Man, I remember going to Blockbuster, and then that was closed.
Yeah, the last Blockbuster was in Alaska, and I think it closed 6 months ago. Maybe.
But I remember
ago.
There used to be one in Milwaukee Avenue in Wicker Park that I would go to in a strip mall, but now it's been replaced by a Potbelly's.
Did they like slightly change the name or something called, like Blockbusted, you know, something like that, so they could keep the logo?
Exactly.
Dave, how's the weather?
It got very stormy last night. We had tornado sirens up by us, and.
I was watching Skilling. I was trying to see if you were on the radar, and you didn't come up.
No, I didn't. I was watching him, too. And,
did you ever lose power?
Never lost power. It didn't even rain till much, much later, and some bad storms came in overnight. But we went in the basement, did what they said you're supposed to do, and the tornado sirens are going on.
I was flipping around, and I saw Brant Miller tell people to get off Half Day Road.
Yeah, which, and I'm not too far from there, so, I heard that too. And so
is it true that Half Day Road is called Half Day Road because it would take a half day to travel to it from the city?
Pretty much because it takes a half day to get anywhere on it.
Well,
depending on the time of day.
But I thought I think that's true.
No, I think that might have been why
it took a half day from the city to that road.
Yeah.
But everybody was safe? You were good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. My dog was a little freaked out.
Aww.
Imagine how much better it was back in the old West, 1800s. You didn't know about black holes and the end of the world.
Right.
Yeah. Or Trump. You didn't know about any of that. 622. There's your top six at six.
That's it.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
He is Nick at Night to Julio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
You know what a good boy does? A good boy takes his mom and dad to a movie on the weekend. He's a good little boy, that Nick. At the age of, what are you, 53?
54, thanks. 54. Appreciate that.
He's a nice little boy.
Oh.
Yeah. You take your parents to see It?
It, Chapter 2.
Oh, man.
You know what? I'm not a good little boy because it sucked.
Oh, I did? That's too bad.
Wait, do your parents like horror movies?
Oh, his dad's the one that got him into it. The reason Nick is so sick, his dad got him into it.
My dad took me to The Exorcist when I was 8.
Oh, whoa. That's amazing parenting. Wow.
Can we talk about the snacks instead of the scary movie? Can we just talk about like the popcorn?
No
Joe's
kidding.
Scared.
Yeah. So why did it suck?
It was, first of all, it's 3 hours long.
Oh, come on.
No, it's 3 hours long. Second of all, everything that was really cool about the first movie does not exist in the second movie. The kids were much more charming than the adults, except for Bill Hader. Bill Hader is the best thing in the new movie, but it did not. I mean, I realize it's a huge novel. I read the book. I like the book very much. But you don't need to make this thing 3 hours long. And frankly, I just don't think Pennywise is scary. I just don't.
Excuse you. I am terrified of clowns. I would never be able to go see this movie. I think the original is what has created my phobia of clowns.
See, that's too bad because Nick and I were going to take it to the circus next time it's in town.
I can't go.
All right, so you hated that. And people shouldn't see it. Do you think Stephen King knows they screwed this thing up?
No, because he's cashing checks like a madman. Yeah. It made $91 million over last weekend, which is actually less than the first one made. But still, I mean, this thing is the biggest hit that's out right now. But it's just, it's belabored. The characters are uninteresting. It goes on forever, and it's just not very scary, man. You know, it's just not.
It's the crap movie time of year for the most part.
I wonder, did your mother find it scary?
No.
Oh, okay.
And she scares easily.
Okay.
I mean, listen, Pinocchio, whale. They whale. He's terrified for 14 months.
Nick knows because for fun, he'll sneak up behind her and go, boo!
Yeah.
Hustlers, is this the Jennifer Lopez movie coming out this weekend?
Yeah, it's based on a true story. It's about a bunch of strippers who rip off a bunch of rich guys. Can't wait.
Story of my life.
This one's over 2 hours, too.
There can't be 2 hours of story in what you just said.
No, there can't be, but we'll find out.
Now, this Goldfinch thing, this looks interesting to me. Am I wrong?
I don't know. It's based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. It's about a kid who, at the age of 13, is at the Metropolitan Museum in New York. A bomb goes off. His mother dies, and it completely affects everything that happens for the rest of his life as he thinks about that incident. The one thing that he has from that is this painting of this goldfinch bird. And it's got an interesting cast. Nicole Kidman leads the cast. The buzz is not so great, but the book is much beloved. Won a Pulitzer Prize. Again, here's another one. 2 hours, 25 minutes long.
What is going on with Hollywood?
I don't know.
Save some money. Edit these films.
This is why I love that alligator movie, Crawl. It was 88 minutes, and people got eaten by alligators for 88 minutes, and that's why you love it.
What's the biggest movie they're talking about at the Toronto Film Festival?
Well, I guess it's probably... the one that's getting the most buzz is Joker, which is Joaquin Phoenix playing the Joker. I think it looks horrible, and it's from the director, from the auteur of the Hangover trilogy, so it should be real good. And it's basically like a darker R-rated take on the Joker character. And, I have no interest. I mean, I think it's going to be horrible. The guy who directed it directed Old School. And the Hangover movies, and I've already seen Joaquin Phoenix in a Taxi Driver ripoff, so I really don't think I need to see him in this.
Well, then you're in a dilemma. You're in a dilemma. So, what are you going to take your parents to see?
What? When?
Well, whenever. I mean, it sounds like there's nothing coming out.
Oh, you mean when the Joker comes out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, take him to see Jackass 2.
Wow. Nick is aggressive this morning.
No, this is Nick.
This is Nick?
You're just getting to know Nick. This is Nick.
Okay. You were more subdued the last couple of times.
No, he was on meds.
Oh.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I didn't take him this morning. I missed taking him this morning.
So.
But the one coming out of the one, I will say this really quickly, the one that coming out of Toronto that I can't wait to see is Dolomite Is My Name. And this is Eddie Murphy playing Rudy Ray Moore, the legendary blaxploitation actor who created the character Dolomite. And if you don't know what Dolomite is, it's one of the funniest things you'll ever see from the mid-70s blaxploitation series of movies with this insane dude named Rudy Ray Moore. And Eddie Murphy plays him, and all indications is that this is like a huge comeback for Eddie Murphy. And like, this is the best thing he's done in many, many, many years. And the movie's supposed to be hilarious and based on a true story. Dolomite Is My Name. That's the one that I'm probably most looking forward to that's coming out of Toronto.
All right, buddy. I'll see you tomorrow, I assume, right? You're going to hang out?
No, I can't make it. Congratulations.
What are you doing tomorrow? You're on the Walk of Fame. Don't you have to be there?
Yeah, you have to come.
Wait. I'm required to come because I'm on the Walk of Fame?
Yes.
You signed the deal, you don't have to go to the Oscars.
Yeah, we take a big group picture.
We took a vow when we got into the Walk of Fame.
What else are you doing on a Friday? Sleeping.
Wait. How did I miss this vow, Dave, that we took?
Okay, don't you remember in the secret ceremony?
Yes.
I was there. It was only special for you, Dave.
If you're not going to be there, you better have a really good reason, like you're sick and in the hospital and near death.
You know what? That's where I'm calling you from.
All right. Talk to you later.
I got an IV in my arm right now and the oxygen tank in my face.
Yeah, I got an IV. Chuck Todd coming up after the news, which is right now.
Welcome to Sunday.
Wait a second.
What day is it? The date's
from May. Thursday.
What year?
Wait, what?
Hello, you there, boy.
Me, sir?
Yes, you, my good fella. What day is today?
Today?
From NBC News in Washington, the longest running show in television history. This is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
Well, let's start where we should start. Good morning, Chuck.
Well, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and congratulations on your Green Bay Packers win in the worst opening season game I've ever seen.
Well, I have to tell you this. It's a reminder of what happens when you don't play preseason.
Exactly.
You know, it is interesting. I say this as both a football fan, and I also understand the safety and all these issues. Football, the first week in both college and pro, has been some of the most atrocious form of the game we've seen in a long time. And I think, fortunately and unfortunately, it's because they don't tackle anymore in practice. They don't practice in real time. We understand why, but part of me wonders, is that number one why the game is sloppier? And I've always wondered if you back off that kind of tough practice, do you actually open yourself up to potential injury during a game?
I don't know.
It seemed to me it'd be a mess.
You can't spend the entire preseason watching or hitting each other when you're not going to hit each other at full speed and then expect to be fine. Now, here's the deal. I got to pay off the bet. Dave, you don't know this, but Chuck and I had a bet on last week's game.
Okay.
If the Bears had won, he had to send Lester Holt back here to Chicago. but since the Packers won, you have to move to Washington and serve as Chuck Todd's butler.
I do?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I do know the town. But I have to just differ with you on one thing. That was not the worst opening. It wasn't even the worst opener between the Bears and Packers. 1980. Chuck, do you remember this? Chester Marshall.
1980, Chuck was zero.
I wasn't, sadly. I remember Chester Marshall because this was a highlight. I remember Al Kohler can't wait. They used to do this great moment. It was like the last second field goal that got blocked or something. Yeah.
But if the field goal was blocked, he ran it in for a touchdown to beat the Bears.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't think in 1980.
That a great start to the season.
Score was 12-6.
Yeah, no, I don't think in 1980 people were wandering around going, this is a Super Bowl team.
Look, as a kid, I was obsessed with Alcoa. Used to sponsor something. It was like Alcoa presents fantastic finishes.
Yeah, I remember that.
And that
yes.
always
I remember
was that. The yeah, one yeah. Packer. That was always the only Packer fantastic finish that they would run was that ridiculous Chester Markle play. Anyway,
we got Denver. Who do you have?
Minnesota. It was like it's ridiculously tough start to this season, having to play division foes back to back. But at least we're not going to be 0-2, and you shouldn't be either. Although I'm worried about your boy. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, we're going to need a quarterback at some point that we don't have to worry about constantly. But at any rate, we'll see.
Yeah, there was a lot of Jake. I don't know. Did Jake Cutler, is he a Bear again?
No, but you know what? You know what's true, though? He was at the game, so the Cutler curse took us down.
Ah, there it is.
I don't know. I'm looking for any excuse possible. All right, so we wake up this morning on 9/12 in a world that is as divided as we've ever seen. What is the focus of the news world this morning? Because it can't possibly be that the Democrats are going to an impeachment inquiry. Oh, how brave.
Well, no, they're not even right. They're going to vote on rules to an inquiry. They haven't decided whether to open. But they are going to let you know how it will be conducted if they decide to do it. But they're not yet doing it, so don't call it an impeachment inquiry. But just so you know, we are looking into the idea of impeachment.
It is absurd
how the Democrats are handling this. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you're somebody said, was quoted as saying this morning, blind quote from one Democratic member. But the bottom line is, if you don't want impeachment, or you do want impeachment, what you need from your leadership is clarity. Because if you don't want impeachment, then you want to be able to say, I'm not with them. I'm independent. They don't speak for me. I make my own decisions. Which, if you're somebody who thinks your voters are not there on impeachment, that's probably good politics for you. And if you're for impeachment, your leadership is giving you the opportunity to be for it. This middle ground approach, where you actually don't let your members make a decision, is actually more, I think, politically problematic than doing something that is more unpopular.
It is. It's nonsense. It's just nonsense. And Nancy Pelosi, who has been given the title aptly at times of being a very strong leader. She's a great fundraiser, all of that. Chuck Schumer's in the witness protection program while she sits on the indecision fence. I mean, how does that win anything?
Well, look, I was talking to a pretty high-ranking House Democrat the other day, and this person said this to me. This person said, look, here's our problem with impeachment. We have a lot of good second articles. Okay? You know, obstruction of, you know, not calling Congress, but they don't have the first article, meaning they don't have that lead article that provides the obvious narrative that makes this feel like a no-brainer. And that's they admit that the problem is all of the president's the stuff that's easiest to point out is illegal is also the pettiest. Okay, the hotel stuff and all that, and that's the trap they're in, right? It's so brazen. You know, it's like what we watched in this business with Dorian in Alabama. On one hand, it's absurd, it's ridiculous, it's petty. On the other hand, it shines a light on how undemocratic of a leader he is, how what he's doing to agencies, how he's abusing sort of his power. But are you going to impeach somebody for abusing their power over telling NOAA when to put out a press release or not? You know, it's like on principle, you understand the outrage. And that's their problem with all of the most, quote, impeachable offenses, is that like most things in Trump's career and Trump's life, they're in that middle of the road graft. You're like, and that's why people used to let him get away with so much minor stuff, because it was too much effort to go after him for the stupid, petty stuff that he would do. But now he's accumulated a lot of stupid, petty stuff, and he's president of the United States.
Does it surprise you at all that the Mueller report specifically stated, we cannot say that the president didn't obstruct justice, Congress should take this up, that it's just gone away because Congress has gone and hid?
It's gone away because Congress has gone and hid, but it's gone away because Robert Mueller, chose to hide. I mean, you know, look, I think that Mueller, I put Mattis in this category, all these guys that believe that their integrity is sort of will protect them from the Trump era has, I think, allowed their integrity to trap them to the point where they're not serving the public. If they have something to say that would add to the public discourse, that would help enlighten and explain the Trump, you know, the troubles that they witness, then speak up and
exactly,
say it.
Exactly.
Don't just sit here and imply that you didn't approve and you, that's why you left or that's why you wrote your report. But don't just sit here and hide behind your integrity because you're afraid of making people mad on one side of the aisle. If you're, I just sort of, as I've watched this, I have really lost a lot of respect. Too strong of a word. But I have to say, I think Mattis and Mueller don't deserve the lionization that they've gotten over the years.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, Mattis in particular is troubling to me because anybody can write a book. Good for you if you write a book and sell a book. But don't write a book and sell a book and say, I can't really talk about what you want to know about the job that I did.
But I'm going to do this book tour and imply exactly. that maybe if you read between the lines in my book, you'll really, maybe you'll find what I really want to say, but I'm not going to tell you. But buy my book.
One last point of genius by the Democrat Party is the fact mm-hmm. that there's a headline story this morning that three senators are demanding answers from Amazon on unfair and dangerous delivery systems. If they're such political geniuses, maybe don't take the president's arguments that most of the public finds insane and jump on those.
Well, I will say this. I think the problem that Amazon has is that it is now a juicier and juicier populist target. And I think you're just going to see a lot more of this on them. And, they, you know, let's see how they handle it. In the same way the tech world, you know, Facebook and Google, they're all, you know, it is never unpopular to investigate a company the size of Amazon or Google. And I just think that that's they've now become too big to ignore politically. And so I think you're going to see an increase in stories like this and potential investigations.
This is inside the Beltway, outside the Beltway stuff, because I can tell you the majority of America is going, don't mess with my prime.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think you got to be careful. I think that's exactly right, that Amazon's popular. It's sort of, it's like the bad, you know, Democrats blew this 20 years ago. Remember when they would target Walmart?
Oh, yeah.
You were like, you know, people like Walmart. You know, that use Walmart. The people that criticize Walmart are the people that don't shop at Walmart. And that turned out to be the case, you know, and over time, I think Democrats backed off those Walmart attacks.
Before we let the great Chuck Todd go, I want to tell you a couple things. The Chuck Todd Cast is a worthy listen every mm-hmm. single week, and if you missed any, we're going to need a note from your mom.
That's right. Malcolm Gladwell this week. We had an interesting back and forth.
How's his hair?
You know, it was really sort of toned down. Oh, I was sort of disappointed, but he put the headphones on. I was worried he wasn't going to put the headphones on.
He's got,
because you don't want to ruin that the terrific mane. You know,
he's got that Oscar really cool. Oscar Gamble White Sox fans Ohio
exactly
players
Oscar
hair.
Oscar Gamble, yes, he is the reincarnation of. I just love the guy because he just makes you think differently. Even if you don't agree with him.
Totally agree.
You know?
Also, of course, you have MTP Daily, and nice to see Katie Turr back, so congratulations to her and the baby.
Yeah, my Mondays are happier.
And finally, Meet the Press, longest-running show in television. Kiss my butt, James Arness. Meet the Press passed you a while ago. thank you, and I look forward to you talking to me next week about a Bears and a Packers win. How about that?
Yeah, I think you guys need, you know what? You never want to start 0-2.
Oh, God.
That dooms your playoff.
Oh, God.
You guys, it's like, you hate to say it's a must win, but guess what?
Of course it's a must
win. It's a must win.
Hey, we got something for you as we go out. Here's Joe.
Alcoa presents Fantastic Finishes.
Alcoa can't wait. We can't wait for tomorrow. Alcoa can't wait.
You're not getting that up and down the dial, Chuck Todd.
Oh, I love that.
Joe. Oh, did we lose him? Oh, I clipped him. I apologize. But he got a little Alcoa can't wait, so there you go. Pat Brady will join me in detail next hour. Pat, how are you today?
Steve, I'm just living that post-middle-age dream. It's all good.
What does that mean? You were napping when I asked how you were today?
Yes, actually. I was taking a little nap.
I'm kind of out there for a second. So stand by for that. Also, Pat, President Trump's calling this morning.
Good. He's got a lot to talk about.
Oh, he sure does. For sure. Chant with me now. 25th Amendment. 25th Amendment. Listen, check out the latest edition of the Steve Cochran podcast at WGNradio.com/Cochran, basically for all things for this show. And we're coming back in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
A lot of people don't know that Bill Curtis started out with The Clash.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine.
It is 7:13. The president should be calling in a second. First, let me say hi to Eric Edelstein, who's joined us now as well. Good morning, Eric. We'll get your mic on there.
Morning. Good morning.
Where do you both work? Eric, where's your company?
My company is AL Media.
No, I mean the address. What street are you on?
Oh, I can't reveal that. Undisclosed location.
And Pat, what's your company?
Next Generation Strategies.
We were talking with Chuck Todd a few minutes ago about the courage of the Democratic Party. Your thoughts?
No, I heard the discussion. I think that the most salient point is clarity. You know, people want clarity, and I think this sort of having one foot on the impeachment side and one on the non-impeachment side isn't serving anyone's purposes. So, you know, I've evolved myself. I've come down in the impeachment camp, but then let's just go and do it.
My point has been entirely, and I stick with this, you need to show the American public that you tried, that you legitimately exercised your constitutional duty of oversight, and you tried to do the right thing for the people. You didn't just sit back. You didn't just wait to try to win an office. You tried.
Yeah, I think there's a broader point, too, Steve, which is, you know, the one hand had said, well, we don't want to set a precedent that every time partisans come in, there's going to be impeachment. No, what about the other precedent, which says a president can get away with anything?
And you don't do anything.
And there's no accountability and no separation of powers.
Can you call every Democrat and tell them that?
Well, you know, interestingly, more and more are moving into that camp. I know it's not a leadership thing, but you do see more rank and file coming out very strongly for it.
Pat, is there anything you see on this that we don't see?
I completely disagree with you guys on this.
Disagree from a political standpoint.
Now, from a
take it out of the winning election thing and think about the American public and what they'd like to see.
Well, I want to put it, because one thing Chuck Todd said that I completely disagree with was on Bob Mueller and on that report and what he said. It was not his job to do like Comey did and step out of line, step out of what you're supposed to be doing and make statements on the president. He was there to make a prosecutorial decision. If you read the report, he didn't. He did that per the letter of the law. To me, I think impeachment's bad for the country, and it's particularly bad if you know you're not going to get the votes in the Senate. It's not
that's politics.
Happen. Well, no, that's reality, and I think it's common sense. We're going to go through an 8-9 month process. It'll be wall to wall. Nothing will get done. Foreign policy, national security will be ignored, and we're going to have an impeachment hearing to get nowhere. Listen, I don't like the guy either.
No, it's not about not liking him.
Well, but no, but I mean, the point is, and I don't like his politics, I don't like what he's done, and I agree the abuses of the office. But we're not there yet, and
we're not going to get there.
We're 13 months from an election. Let's have an election.
Okay, let's hope we get there. Let's hope we can get the next 13 months. Because I'm telling you right now, you know what's bad for America? A president who's out of control, breaks the law every day, and lies to the American people every day.
But he's been doing that for 3 years.
We're lucky to be here.
But it's like I sort of take the longer view, which is where do we go from here? If we sort of turn away because, and I understand what Pat's saying, the Senate's not going to convict. What does that say to future generations? That it's just okay? I don't know.
I'm more worried about the 28-year-old political staffer who's going to be running campaigns in 10 years that thinks these campaigns are the right way to do things.
Later, loser.
That's part of the problem.
Oh, God, I forgot he was calling.
Oh, boy.
I
hope he wasn't listening.
Take back what you said.
Later, loser.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, Cochran. I was listening to the online stream at WGNradio.com. I agree with Pat, frankly. Impeachment's bad for the country. It really is. Now, can we make this quick? I got to troll that filthy-mouthed woman, Chrissy Teigen, on Twitter for about 15 minutes.
So another week, another celebrity spat. This time Chrissy Teigen, the wife of John Legend. You called her a filthy-mouthed woman, and I can't even say what she called you.
That's because it was totally offensive. You know, frankly, Chrissy Teigen is so vulgar and obnoxious, she could manage Joy Behar's Twitter account. She really could. Now, on the bright side of all this, Filthy Mouthed Wife is now the new name for my son Baron's new garage band that he started with his friends.
Cool.
I love when my tweets can be a source of inspiration for him. I really do.
He's such a great father. Mr. President, any truth to the report you directed your staff to deal with the National Weather Service? A tweet that contradicted you about Alabama, and did you ask weather staffers there to change their forecast to support you?
Okay, excuse excuse me. Yep. Excuse me, yes. Look, Cochran, please don't make me take out my Sharpie again. Have you seen Alabama? Have you seen it? These are people that choose to eat at Waffle House, okay? If you ask me, that deserves a state of emergency in itself. I mean, I once saw a mother pig nursing a baby raccoon in the bread aisle of a Walmart in Alabama. That's how bad it is.
Funniest part of that story is that you were in a Walmart in Alabama. Now, what about the weather, sir?
It's a campaign stop. Look, the National Weather Service is all meteorologists. Do you watch your local news, Cochran? Weathermen are notoriously wrong with their reporting. Plus, I don't trust anyone that has that much peppy energy before 8 in the morning.
Well, you're not wrong about that. So you fired your national security advisor, John Bolton, this week. He says he resigned. You say you fired him.
You know, I Googled John Bolton the other day, and I got an albino walrus. Have you seen the mustache on this guy? Wow. Look, he says he resigned, but nope, I fired him. I burned through the national security advisors like I do wives around here. Luckily for me, John Bolton's mustache signed an NDA, so notebook.
Oh, good. Good.
Sucks to be him. Seriously, the stash is so huge, it would walk into the White House Situation Room before he did. Even Wilfred Brimley sees Bolton's stash and goes, damn.
Well, not a lot of people seem to like him.
You know, next time I'll choose someone a lot less controversial. Maybe Antonio Brown. Hey, Mike Pence, get Robert Kraft on the phone.
Will do, sir, but remember, today is massage day for Mr. Kraft.
Oh, right. Better just leave a message, Mike.
Hey, we just heard the Vice President, Mike Pence, there, and some are saying that it's kind of tense between you two. Your relationship's different since the midterms last year, and you're rumored to even consider a new running mate for 2020. What's the story there?
Oh, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Dumping Mike for another running mate in 2020? That's crazy. And by crazy, I mean nobody even told me I could do that. Can I do that? No.
What was that, sir?
Nothing, Mike. No, I'm totally, most likely just kidding about that. Never once, though, I thought about dumping Mike. Not at all. He's a great guy. I would never cast him aside or turn my back on him. After all, it's not like he's my daughter, Tiffany. You know, isn't that right, Pencey?
You couldn't be any more correct, Your Grace.
Thanks, Mike. Nobody gets a Big Mac extra value meal with a Diet Coke better than Mike. Mm. Nobody.
My lips are puckered and ready for you at a moment's notice, sir. You've always been very generous to me, always ready to include me on official policies. In fact, just to share a story with Mr. Steve there, the other day the president said that if there's a big recession that hits before the election, he's going to find a way to give me all the credit. What a guy.
That's fantastic.
That's because I'm a giver, Mike. Huge giver.
Hey, we heard you not giving temporary protected status to Bahamians who came here. I mean, this includes little tiny children. You said they're very bad gang members that could be in that crowd. Very, very bad. Drug dealers and others. Whoopi Goldberg called your comments racist.
Come on, Whoopi Goldberg? What is this, 1994? Are we still listening to her? I've got a CD with 80 hours of free AOL service that's more relevant and useful than Whoopi. Believe me.
Wanted to get your take on Mark Sanford, the former governor of South Carolina. Left town for South America with his mistress in 2009. Told everybody he was hiking the Appalachian Trail. Now running primary challenge against you. What's your comment there?
Frankly, I would never do what he did.
Have an affair?
No, hike. I hate hiking. Why hike when you can ride a golf cart? Makes no sense. By the way, how can you do the dirty flamingo dance with that broad from Argentina? I don't understand.
I think you mean flamenco, sir.
Whatever. Mark Sanford is unqualified to be president. He didn't even have the common sense to offer that chick a penny's worth of hush money. Such an amateur.
Well, finally, sir, the next Democratic presidential debate's tonight on ABC, and Joe Biden is in no way slowing down on the frequency of, well, mistakes. He called you President Hump at a fundraiser this week, and then joke saying it was a Freudian slip. What's your thought on that?
You know, I will tell you, I actually watched it and slowed down the video. I could actually see a row of hair plugs fall out and go right into his mouth. It's like he swallowed a caterpillar. You know what? I have no problem with that remark made by Joe Lydon. Get it? Two can play at that game, Joe. But it's sad that poor Sleepy Joe's still clinging to this small lead in the Democratic polls. Have you seen that? Although it's nice to see him clinging to something besides women's shoulders.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to leave it here. But I could put you on hold if you want to talk to Pat Brady off the air.
Give me Pat's Twitter handle. I'll follow him.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks for calling, President Trump.
Later, loser.
It's President Trump. Fairly good pal of yours. Congratulations on your new friend.
You seem very energetic today.
Yes, very awake.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? At 8:20 in the morning, Pence is in the private quarters.
Must be on their second Diet Coke or regular Coke. Sorry,
that's not probably diet. No, yeah. Diet, please.
He's not really thinking about dropping Pence, I hope.
I mean, you heard it right there. We don't make stuff up.
Nikki Haley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. I'm sure she wants a. I'm sure she wants a part of this dream train as it's going along.
She'd get fired by Twitter. I don't think she. Yeah. She'll be our nominee in 24.
Oh, please. Like Don Jr. is not teed up. And Ivanka. And after that, Barron, if he remembers who he is. It's 7:23. The Trump dynasty rolls on. And we're back with the MVP in a moment.
People.
Here's the thing.
Can I have your attention, please, people?
The most famous.
Amazing.
Just great.
So great.
Awesome.
You rock my world.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet.
And the MVPP is something you can get on to. Nominate somebody to be the next most valuable person on the planet. Could be anybody, a person, a pet, a neighborhood, an organization, a plant. Well, probably not a plant.
Ooh, that what kind of plant would be the MVP?
A rhododendron. I don't even know what that is. Is that a plant?
Yes, it's a flowering bush.
Anybody with a unique story, just go to WGNradio.com/contest, fill out the nomination form. That's WGNradio.com/contest. And every weekday morning at 7:20, we say, you are the most valuable person on the planet, Eileen Emmons.
Hello and good morning.
I mean, Timmons. I said Emmons, Timmons. And you are the most valuable person on the planet.
Well, thank you. I'm honored for this. And good morning.
Well, nice to talk to you. You're an author, an artist, a professor, a life coach, a labyrinth builder, a board member, and the founder of what organization?
Angeline, which means little angel in Gaelic, my Irish heritage.
Have you ever played Gaelic football? You sound like a Gaelic football fan to me.
No, regular football. Oh, okay. Regular U.S. football.
And Angeline is what?
Angeline is a company that I formed to spread awareness on forgiveness and sharing the act of forgiveness, the acts of forgiveness, and how to forgive and how it can change your life.
See, it's interesting to me because I think we live in a time where most people blame everybody else for everything, but you're saying and your premise is that we got to drop the self-blame at some level.
Correct. How can you forgive others if you can't forgive yourself? And understanding the process to forgive yourself makes it easier to reach out and ask for forgiveness and then also forgive others. And the path for forgiveness can take people on extraordinary journeys. And it is a journey. Forgiveness is a journey. There's no set time rules or anything.
Well, it definitely takes a bit of time and purposeful energy in order to achieve forgiveness. And the wonderful thing about your message is that truly it helps the person doing the forgiving more than it helps anybody, right?
You're absolutely correct. Because by holding on to holding on to the hurt, you're hurting yourself the second time. Forgiveness is a gift. So you have the initial hurt of yourself, and by holding that energy on, it can affect your immune system. It can impact, there's studies that relate that it can change your immune system by living in these lower energies and not releasing it. So not only that, you're forgiving the person, you're forgiving yourself, you're releasing these harms that you're doing to yourself by holding on to it.
Does seem like I should probably let a few of these grudges go. I've got a full book of them. Let me just start on page one. And Angeline is best found what, through your website?
Yes, it's I have a website, angeline.com, or anybody can email me at angeline@gmail.com.
And that's A-I-N-G-I-L-I-N. Got a TEDx talk out there as well and a book called The Forgiveness Fairy. And I appreciate you being on. You are the most valuable person on the planet.
Thank you both. Have a wonderful day.
You as well.
You need to be visited by the Forgiveness Fairy, Steve Cochran.
She sounded like a tiny little woman. She sounded like she could be a fairy.
I know. Magical. She's talking about energy.
I didn't hear her wings flapping, though, as she flew around the room.
I think she was kind of...
hiding it?
Yeah.
You know those fairies.
Pretty fantastic and magical.
So a TEDx talk as well as the book, The Forgiveness Fairy. You know, and get your MVPP nominations in. 7:32, we'll come back, and I'll do my best to shut up. We'll Pat and Eric talk. How do you think that's going to go? Headlines on the way, too, on 7:20 WGN.
The Cochran Show, so very glad they have you. Even Brady has a lot less wine when he's on with Adelstein. Eric Adelstein. Eric Adelstein.
That made his mom so happy.
Oh, Eric Adelstein.
You don't seem like you're even enjoying the song, Eric.
I get choked up. It's emotional.
Oh, it's an emotional response because you look like you had gas.
Sort of verklempt.
Same thing.
Is it upbeat enough for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have no problem with that. Yeah. I don't. It's
very smooth. Like, it smooth, is smooth jazz.
It's sort of a mixture of genres, though, wouldn't you say? It's kind of got an easy jazz vibe to it, but there's a little hip hop in there, and it's good.
Patsy just threw together. He took some time on yours.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Democratic debate tonight, does it matter?
I'm not sure it does. meaning
because we're 13 months out.
Well, we're 13 months out. I also think this race seems to be coalescing around Warren and Biden. I mean, I know it's a long way to go. There's still all these other candidates in there, but it doesn't seem like any of the others are breaking out of the pack. So could any of them find a Kamala Harris moment like she did in June and really launch themselves? I feel like the concrete is hardening a little bit, and it seems to be coalescing around Warren and Biden, and I doubt anything that happens tonight changes that.
How does Elizabeth Warren become electable in this country, other than the fact that she'd run in against Donald Trump if she got the nomination, because she's been so stridently far left?
Well, first of all, if you compare the things, let's talk about what she has said. If you talk about the things that she's criticized big business, corporate America for, and you go back and look at things that Teddy Roosevelt or Franklin Roosevelt said, she seems mild in comparison. She is a capitalist. She does believe in the free market, but she thinks that this income inequality and the increasing wealth that's consolidated at the top is the biggest challenge facing this country.
But you know better than anybody, because this is your business. When you have an image that's been established by your making or not, you have to adjust it to whatever you need it to be.
Right.
Does she have that ability?
I think so. And there's a bit of a media narrative from the East Coast, frankly, that is, you know, perpetuated by D.C. and New York, that sort of says, like, oh, she challenges us. She challenges these orthodoxies, so she's unelectable. I don't believe she's unelectable. And I think the general election polls that have come out demonstrate that.
There is a sexist thing that goes on in this country that is not gone away, and that is women can be put aside if they are, quote, unlikable.
Yeah.
If a man's unlikable, he's tough.
Well,
she's not likable as it stands right now. What do you do about that?
Well, it's something called the double bind, which affects women, particularly running for executive positions, where they have to be likable and competent, where a man can just be competent. It's a big challenge. When a woman seems tough, they then use the B word.
Yeah, bitchy. Yeah,
yeah, and all that kind of stuff. And look, it's something that transcends politics. It's the way we create female archetypes in this country. I don't have an easy answer to what she can do other than connect with people, talk about her story, and relate. I will say, times you've seen her more off the cuff, she's a very warm person. I've been in a room with her. She, compared to other senators, we did a shoot a few years ago, a bunch of senators, including a bunch of female senators, she was the most gracious,
approachable
real person.
I felt the same thing. I met her one time. She hugged me, but she did take my wallet. I did want to say.
I mean, what happens leading up to a debate? Do you take the candidate aside and then, like, how do you get them to that point where they're at ease? The thing that you see about them when they're off the cuff and comfortable, that's what voters want to see.
It's hard with 10 people on that stage. And a lot of times when you're doing debate prep, you're trying to figure out the jabs and the counterpunches and the vulnerabilities that you have as a candidate and how you're going to respond to them. But I do think something that we do try to do a lot is to say authenticity is what people want. Now, I think personally, someone like Elizabeth Warren, who's so steeped in policy, I don't know how much debate prep they're doing with her. I mean, she's pretty natural.
She has
her feet.
A plan for everything.
She has a plan for everything. So.
Yeah, see my plan. Go to my plan. Pat, give me a moderate's view on this. What would make Elizabeth Warren electable if she became the nominee?
I don't think she's electable, and I think that the people that voted for Trump last time, the more moderates that don't like Trump and are looking somebody to vote for, aren't going to vote for Elizabeth Warren.
So they're going to sit it out.
They're going to sit it out, and Trump gets back in. And I just disagree with Eric. I don't think she's a capitalist. I don't disagree on the income disparity, and there are ways to deal with that. But constantly attacking Wall Street, constantly attacking the markets, constantly attacking the financial institutions, that's great in the far left part of the Democratic primary, but that's not going to carry the day. A lot of people actually like making money, think capitalism is a good thing, don't think Wall Street, well, far from perfect, is necessary and is actually productive. So And I don't think, and I understand the double standard with the women, but I don't think she's capable of being an engaging candidate. She's a Harvard East Coast law professor who was a Republican and was a bankruptcy professor. I mean, these are things that she's not going to change about her personality that are going to make her likable. And whether you like it or not, and whether it's fair or not, likability is an issue.
And Eric, if you were advising her campaign, what would you change?
I keep doing what she's doing. I mean, she's risen to the top of a field of 23 candidates. She has a grassroots base that is wide and broad. Of a lot of politicians, whether you agree with her or not, she has principled positions. And I think that's something that is overlooked a lot in politics, is that you don't have to agree with someone, but you have to respect their position.
But here's the thing that I think is going to kill them, and it's going to kill all of them, is this Medicare for or Medicaid for all stuff. That means 150 million people are going to have to give up their private health insurance. And that, I think, it certainly does, as a more moderate, turns me off. I don't want to give up my private health insurance because Elizabeth Warren.
That's a huge problem the Democrats have backed themselves into the corner over.
Yeah, look, I think I agree with that. I do think there's ways to do Medicare for All, which doesn't negate private insurance entirely. That Medicare for All has become this slogan. It can mean lots of things to different people. I do agree that when it gets branded as, oh, and we're going to take away 100 million people's private insurance, it's a huge problem for Democrats. It doesn't have to mean that.
So here's the big question. I'd ask all three of you this and start with G. Is America fed up enough of Donald Trump, keeping in mind the latest popularity numbers are 38% now support him? Let's say it drops to 35 and stays there.
Here, let me grab this really quickly, because I want to talk about the 9th Congressional District in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Oh, can I ask a question before you do that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was the
question. No, that wasn't a question. The question is, with 65% of the country against him, are the 65% of the country going to actually go out and vote, or if given the choice of a candidate on the Democrat side they're not excited about versus Trump, they'll sit it out?
They're going to sit it out. I'm telling you, we've got to figure something out, because right now on the Democratic side, I don't see anyone that can sweep all the people that need to be swept up in order to get them to come and vote.
Sit it out or vote for a Democrat they don't like?
No, I think they'll come out and vote. I think it's always when you have multiple candidates against one candidate, it seems like your field is weak, right? Until there's a nominee and it's one-on-one, it's a different dynamic.
Remember when it came down to Trump or Ted Cruz? That was exciting. Sit it out or vote for somebody you don't like.
Well, let's look at the 9th Congressional District in North Carolina, which was Tuesday night. And listen, I'm not a Trump fan either, but the reality is that Trump went down to that one county and campaigned on the same stupid stuff he's been saying for 3.5 years, and his people turned out, whereas in the other county, on the other side of the district, like G's saying, those folks didn't turn out. So, listen, I hope Eric's right, but the reality is what we saw in the last election, the most evidence we have right now is the Trump people are going to turn out, and the others, and that guy was a great candidate.
But hold on a second. Hold on. Let's talk about that seat. That's a district that Donald Trump won by 12 points. It shouldn't be a race that Republicans have to even struggle for, and this guy squeaked out a victory. Yeah. That's a terrible warning sign for how Trump will perform in a lot of suburban districts.
I agree completely, but the reality is the Republican won, and the Republican won because those people that Trump went down there.
He shouldn't have had to sweat it.
I agree. If you're talking about people coming out, the Trump people will come out.
But if you're going to work this morning or whatever you're doing while you're listening, and thank you for that, it all comes down to the same thing, which we say pretty much every week. You got to vote. You got to actually go out and vote.
Can I make one other point? The 2018 midterm turnout was the highest turnout since 1912.
50%.
But we thought it was going to be so much of a bigger blue wave than it was.
I don't know. We won the House.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
I mean, it was a pretty big wave.
I don't know. For me, I guess I thought it was going to be a lot more.
It was the biggest. Midterm turnout since 20.
Yeah, but extrapolate the math.
1912.
A big presidential turnout is 60%.
No, it's more like 70.
But it also,
okay, 70% means 30% don't show up. There were 100 million people who didn't vote last time.
I understand. I'm talking in relative terms. All I can do is compare it to other elections, not sort of the way we wish the world worked.
But it also re-energized.
You want to pat me on the head when you did that?
But I feel like it also re-energized the strong Trump supporters as well. Like, I mean,
oh yeah, no, I'm not saying Pat's right. The right will come out, and the Trump supporters will come out. I'm saying, look. Putting aside whatever you feel about Donald Trump, you've always harped on, Steve, more people need to participate.
Yep.
And then if you don't participate, don't complain. I think we are headed for an historic presidential turnout in 2020?
I think there are so many disenfranchised people that feel so uninspired that I don't think they're going to, they feel like and the Democrats are offering them anything that's any different.
I don't necessarily disagree, and I don't think inspiration is the only reason people come out to vote. Sometimes they come out to vote out of fear, out of responsibility, or out of social pressure.
When does Oprah get in?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
All right, before we go, let's talk about what really matters. Bears beating the Broncos?
Yes.
Big?
No, but they'll win.
Tight?
Tight.
Think it comes down to Eddie Pinata, their kicker?
Is that his name, Pinata?
Yeah, it's Pinata.
No, it's not. Garrett, don't listen to this guy.
That's Pinata.
What was the other guy's name, Dave, that they didn't make that was so funny? The guy that like had a name like Choke or something.
Oh, Blewett.
Chris Blewett.
Chris Blewett.
Chris Blewett.
Okay, it wasn't like Choke exactly, but
Tommy Choke got cut. Tommy Choke. Yeah, Tommy Choke got cut. Pat, Bears or Broncos?
I have no idea.
Well, thanks for playing our game, Pat. Thanks for chatting.
Wow, what a party pooper.
No, I really, I just don't. I don't follow the NFL.
Nobody who follows it knows what's going to happen.
What are you, your grandmother? You couldn't make a choice? Bears or Broncos? There's two choices.
Hey, Steve, Sunday is laundry day.
All right, boys. Anything we need to know about the political week coming up?
No, I just think the debate tonight will be interesting. I don't think it'll fundamentally change anything, but, you know, I've certainly been wrong before. I'll be wrong again.
I just want to know, Pat, is there somebody that you would vote for on the who would you vote for?
On the Dem side?
Yeah.
He's a Marianne Williamson fan, I think.
I actually, right now, it would be Kamala Harris.
Okay. Just curious.
You want to ask me?
Who would you vote for?
Biden. Yeah.
I take that back. I think you can fill the Library of Congress with the things I've been wrong about, but I think Joe Biden is going to implode.
Handsy grandpa?
I don't think there's, like you say, there's not the energy. My buddies
Handsy
and I would say,
grandpa.
Hey, I
that's
like
nice.
Him. I really
I do. I'd vote for Joe Biden, but I just don't think he's going to be there.
Okay. Just, I was
but
just
then
curious.
Again, I for 4 years on this station said that Donald Trump will never win the Republican primary.
Yeah, you've been doing really well.
And I'm President McCain. I didn't get that ambassadorship either, so.
You know, you do one more resume credit, and you're not going to be on the show.
So he's picking the Broncos.
He's going Broncos. Yeah, he's all Broncos. Right after he finishes folding. Eric Adelstein, Pat Brady, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
We need another break, right? And then we're coming back with the news, and then more on entertainment. MOREON Entertainment coming up on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than one night. Yeah, honey, or kiss me, kiss me.
Give me an MOREON, moron. Entertainment.
How do you spell that again?
MORE. I guess you put a dash in there if you wanted.
Right. I've been spelling it MOROM.
Well, that's the description, but what we're doing here
is more, the word like plentiful.
Right.
Plentiful entertainment.
We're self-identifying.
Right.
But we're also pointing out that we bring you more than just the standard entertainment crap that Dean's sick of.
Right, which was the original name of this segment, standard entertainment crap that Dean's sick of on entertainment.
Hey, did anyone tell you I'm going to be on your show Sunday?
I was going to mention that.
Sunday, live.
You're going to be on the whole show.
Live. Well, that depends if you want me to stay. From Blackhawks training camp, I'll be on with Dean. I'll be his co-host. I'll be his Vanna White.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. So you will be on location, the two of you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Together mm-hmm. at the United mm-hmm. Center.
You should sell tickets. This is what you need to sell tickets to.
We should, even though it's a free event.
Oh.
The Hawks were hoping for a crowd of maybe 50, 75 people. If thousands show up, it's because Dean and I are there.
Yep.
I mean, you two are in demand.
I would get extra security.
Match of the morons.
I would get extra security because it's going to be epic.
Is that the kids are calling it? Epic?
Yeah, it's going to be epic and rad.
Do and awesome.
Say, do they still say that?
Awesome!
It's going to be.
You know, it's going to be off the chain.
9 to 12 is the actual event, and in addition to us being there, and God knows that should be plenty, really, for anyone. We're also going to have many guests from the Chicago Blackhawks, who will be joining us on the live broadcast.
Do I need to bring any sort of preparatory show prep material? I mean, what's my part of the bargain here? What do I need to do to help the show?
Pretty much what I do is just show up.
All right, good, good, good.
I think that's all we'll need to do. You know, Dave Schwann, my news man, he's not going to be there.
Why?
So it'll be much more pleasant. I don't know why.
By the way, my Schwanny is not just his newsman.
I would like I would like if he was there, but I'm told that he will not be.
You will have a sports person.
Andy Mazur, who is our sports guy on Sunday morning, he also will not be there. So basically nobody from the Sunday morning show except from the regular
show. Why won't Andy Mazur be there?
He's
Andy,
on assignment.
Yeah, Andy will be pinch hitting with the White Sox this weekend. I believe out Joe in Brand. Seattle.
I mean, literally Joe. Pinch hitting?
Yes, he will be pinch hitting. He's going to come off for Abreu in the seventh inning.
Well, who's doing Andy's job for Dean?
Joe Brand.
Joe Brand.
Joe Brand.
Well, we like Joe. Is Joe going to be there? Yeah.
Joe will be there.
Joe will be there. Mm. Not Schwanny.
So Schwanny's the only one that's being ostracized?
I specifically asked that he not be there.
Well, whatever. You guys will be next level, okay?
Where are we going to be? Do we know?
I don't know.
I don't know.
We're in a parking lot, I hear.
Yeah, we'll be outside in a big tent.
Oh, we're in a big tent.
It'll
outside.
Be like the WGN Back to School Fair that we went to.
Can't miss us.
Oscar has a very legitimate question. Oscar, you go ahead.
Yes, good morning. There's big tent special Sunday. Which one of you guys is Tom Skilling again? I got you guys confused.
Well, we drew a name out of a hat last night. Dean's Tom Skilling and I'm Billy Joel, but we're going to switch halfway through the show.
Yeah.
Will it be on the 25-year anniversary of WGN Morning News?
You mean the big primetime special next Tuesday night at 7?
How great would that be, Dean, if I just started showing up at everything?
You should. You should, Steve.
I'm just going to wander in. And honestly, who's going to stop me? I'm going to wander into Channel 9 Tuesday night and just jump on set.
Yeah. And see how long it takes for someone to notice that it's you and not me. Or and Tom.
Till next week.
Oh, you know what? Tom Skilling's going to be on the primetime special also. So we've got Baldapalooza going on.
Well, you know, I should
three
come out.
Tom Skillings?
I should come out just to get a picture of you and I and Skilling together.
Yeah. How often does that happen?
Oh, never. It's like Hallie's Comet. Yeah. Oscar, you're a good man. Thanks. Give Oscar everything on the prize list twice. All right, so here's what's coming up. Kevin Hart.
Are you going to be at the big Walk of Fame ceremony tomorrow?
Sure, sure. And you have to go. You know who was trying to weasel his way out of it was Nick DiGilio. I said, no, once you're in, you got to show up.
Yep. Yeah,
I was trying to weasel my way out of it also. But
right, and somebody told you the same thing.
I'm going to be... I wanted to go, but I had some other things that cleared, some other commitments that I was able to reschedule.
Here's the deal. If you're on a Walk of Fame, the only way you get out of it is to move out of Chicago. And then, even then, you should fly back.
Right. Right. You know what's really nice is when you go by the old Tribune Tower and see all of our plaques on the sidewalk covered with construction debris and scaffolding.
Can you even get to them right now?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally scaffolding around them. I drove by the Tribune the other day because I couldn't get into the party. By the way, if people that run this place don't want me to work here, you don't have to lock me out of my parking garage. Just tell me you don't want me to come in. So I drove back around the block and came by the Tribune Tower, and I hadn't been on that backside where we used to park our cars.
Right, where the building's
gone. It looks like a bomb went off.
It does.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like everything is flattened except there's like three walls, and you can see inside. It's crazy.
Yeah, you can see into where our offices used to be.
Yeah, it's sad, really, kind of in a way.
But I think the scaffolding, actually, Dean, back me up on this, I think it's protecting our plaques because you're not getting cigarette butts dropped on them. You know, people aren't walking over them right now.
I don't know where mine is. I think it's in a closet. Honestly, I don't know where it is.
Well, you haven't been planted yet in the sidewalk because you were just last year.
Yes, so I don't know what
we did with ours. Future plans at our new, a new location on Wacker.
Yeah.
Because I go by there all the time to, you know, to see if anything's changed. And Dave's right. Everything's covered with scaffolding. I assume protected. But I miss the days when, you know, we'd be in the showcase and you turn around and see somebody urinating on your stuff. That was nice on an early Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
Or Jimmy DeCastro used to sweep them. Remember, he'd go out and sweep them?
He did used to go out and sweep our stars.
This golden broom.
Kevin Hart, The Situation, Felicity Huffman, Kylie Jenner, and the Kylie Jenner story, by the way. This is crazy. I cannot believe you'd have someone related to the Kardashian family that might be posing naked. This is a shock to all of us. And Bison have even made More on entertainment when we come back.
Animal stories today, little Stevie.
All right, Uncle Lair.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 9720.
Been multitasking all morning, Dean. I spilled my wallet, which is like George Costanza's wallet. It's about 4 feet thick. And in doing so, I've gone and thrown out a lot of stuff. And I had a Walmart gift card that somebody gave me a long time ago. I just checked the balance. If you want it, I have $1.86 left on it.
Wow, you get a lot of stuff at Walmart for $1.86.
All right, I'll give it to you Sunday.
You drop any cash up in the studio there, bud?
Yeah, you never know. There's nothing but money on this side.
All right, where be the there in a sec. Sits.
I already picked it up, Super Joe.
Kevin Hart's okay.
Did you find your Blockbuster card in there?
You know, when I change wallets once a year. And when I change wallets, you know, I say, well, I can't throw this stuff out yet. So I keep the old wallet. So I have a collection of old wallets with stuff in that goes back, like, you know, 10 years. And I'm sure there's a Blockbuster card in one of them.
I kept it just because it's, you know, it's antiquated now.
It's kitschy.
Yeah, it's kitschy. I have that. I also have my very first driver's license that was paper.
Oh, we were just talking about driver's license. It's a true story.
Made out of paper. And I got, about a week after I got my driver's license, I got a speeding ticket. And the cop wrote their staple marks because he gave me the ticket and took my license.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we had just moved. So the cop crossed out my old address, wrote my new address on it. I still have it. Memories of being a wild teenager.
That'll all be in the book, Dean Richards, as written by Steve Cochran.
The driver's license years.
So this morning, Pat Brady thought it would be funny to take a picture of my license, and then he showed it to G, and she goes, oh, my God, who's that? And then you said...
I said, it's illegal because it doesn't even look like you.
No, what'd you say before that? You said it's the worst driver's license picture I've ever seen.
Nobody has a good driver's license picture.
No, but I'm telling you, my driver's license picture looks like I just got out of Joliet. But I got a max security.
It doesn't even look like you. I mean, that's what's...
Well, here's what happened. When I took the picture at the Jesse White facility, they said, we need you to look meaner and not like you.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
They don't like you to smile. I tried doing like a big fake smile the last time, and they asked me to cut it out.
I didn't know you could do this. I knew a woman who went back twice to have her picture retaken. Really? Paid twice to have her picture retaken.
Wow.
I think you can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So hair and makeup. All right, makeup. Kevin Hart's out of the hospital.
Kevin was released yesterday. He's gone to a rehab facility for physical therapy where it's reported that he will stay for about a week and then will go home for at-home physical therapy, but he seems to be doing pretty well after fracturing his spine in three places after that awful car accident 10 days ago. Things seem to be going pretty well.
What's the situation?
Situation. We have situation breaking news, actually. This just came over the wire. This is Mike Sarantino that we're talking about from Jersey.
Well, everyone knows, Dean.
Jersey Shore, just to make sure. He's been in the slammer for the last 8 months on tax evasion charges. He was released early this morning from the Otisville Federal Correctional Institute in upstate New York.
You should see his driver's license picture.
Doesn't that sound like that sounds like a jail, doesn't it?
An Otisville?
The Otisville Correctional Institute.
But you know who lives there? The guy that does all the elevators.
Really?
Yeah, he's from there. Yeah.
I mean, they named it after him, apparently. Yeah.
Felicity Huffman going to find out today?
Felicity Huffman is going to find out tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
What's going to happen. The prosecutor in her case wants her to serve some time. Wants her to pay $15,000. No, she admitted to paying $15,000 to improve her daughter's SAT score. The prosecutor wants her to go to jail and pay a fine, but the U.S. Probation and Pretrial Services System report says that the minimum sentence should be given no jail time because there were no victims in this case. So we'll find out.
And the jail time would be token anyway, right?
I would think
so. I mean, token for me because I'm not in jail.
Yeah. We'll see if they take the recommendation of the probation board.
The daughter who is making all the money as a social media star, what's her name, Olivia Jade, something?
Mm-hmm.
She's now a year down the road. Her business is tanked. And Olivia Jade, yeah, she was a freshman at USC and a thriving YouTube star. Now she's dropped out of school, and her social media influencer status is completely uncertain. Mm-hmm. Awkward Thanksgiving coming up. Mm-hmm. Awkward.
Patch the mashed potatoes, mother.
Right. Marc Jacobs Beauty, Estee Lauder, and Sephora supposedly had all dropped her. Right, last word?
She'll come back. The situation, Mike Sorrentino, he'll get a reality show out of this whole thing after in jail. The Huffman's daughter, Lori Loughlin's daughter, all of those people, they're going to get reality shows. It's too juicy for somebody to not exploit.
You promise? Because you know how I worry. Kylie Jenner's posing naked for Playboy.
This is a beautiful story, really.
Is it?
I know it sounds icky, but she put on her Instagram yesterday, as anybody would if you pose naked. Who wouldn't put a picture up on your Instagram?
Well, I wish Instagram had been around when I posed naked.
She and her boyfriend, rapper Travis Scott,
mm-hmm.
She's completely naked.
Mm-hmm.
He is just shirtless. And they posted this picture up. Apparently, it's going to be part of an upcoming Playboy magazine cover story that's captioned "Wild in Love." Now, here's the beautiful. Not that them posting naked is not beautiful, but here's the really beautiful part.
Yes,
she is following in the footsteps of her older sister Kim Kardashian, who got naked for Playboy back in 2007. And you know me; I'm a sucker for family tradition.
You have always said that when it comes to posing naked, you're all about family.
Yeah, if some families have these traditions, some go to the same colleges, some follow in the footsteps of, professions. But, some families, they just like to take nude photographs of themselves and for public usage. That seems to be what's happening in this family. So,
is that what happened in your family, Dave?
Well, not exactly, but I don't want to go into it.
So is she balancing a wine glass on her derriere?
No. She has a cowboy hat on, and that's all she has on.
This is the weird part. When Kim Kardashian balanced that wine glass on her derriere, we still had the wine guy. What's the wine guy called? The sommelier? The sommelier had to come over and explain, whether it had certain bouquets and things. I mean, the whole thing was awkward.
I bet it had some certain bouquets.
Oh, man. Oh. For beans involved.
And for the first time, we have bison that have made the Moron Entertainment Report.
Oh, you know me. I love, if I don't have a nice story about somebody who's naked, I like to bring you a nice story about animals.
What happened, Uncle Lair?
So, the story, little Stevie, is Yellowstone National Park in Montana.
You ever been out there, Uncle Lair?
I've never been out there, but I hear it's beautiful. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't care.
So, you know how much money Lou Jack made not caring? What a career.
Right? So apparently there's a problem with the bison just standing around on the highways out there, and the cars can't get by. So they've gone out there with these air horns, with loud things to get them to move. They don't move. You know what worked to get them to move?
What?
They play on loudspeakers the AC/DC song Hell's Bells.
This is such a charming little ballad. The bison go, all right, we get it, we're out of here.
Mm. One bison turns to the other, I like Highway to Hell a lot better. let's get out of here.
I would have thought you were going to tell me that the bison would only move when they saw the Johnny Depp perfume commercial.
The is it called Sauvignon?
Sauvignon.
I saw it came on TV last night. I thought it was a trailer for a movie or something that I hadn't heard of. And then it turned out to be a cologne commercial.
Johnny Depp drives down a highway. There's a bison in the road. He turns around, goes in the other direction, inexplicably pulls off the road, grabs his shovel, starts to dig what looks like his own grave,
right.
And then looks up at the sky, and that's supposed to make you buy cologne.
Right. I want to smell like Johnny Depp.
On the side of a road.
Let me tell you something. I've been around Johnny Depp many times. You don't want to smell like Johnny Depp.
And that's the lesson of today's Moron Entertainment, kids. Don't smell like Johnny Depp. All right, buddy. Thank you.
See you.
That's Dean Richards. We're back with the headlines next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Bella Gandhi and the pee-pee. Wow, I'm all choked up.
Do you need help? Do you need me to help you here?
Thank God none of that was on the air.
No.
Bella Gandhi waiting in the PPG Paints green room. She's going to be on with us after the 9 o'clock news. All right, we got to jump in here. Josh is standing by, and Josh Morgerman is a veteran storm chaser. And Science Channel's new series, Hurricane Man, is coming up. We're running a little late here, Josh. We want to get as much out of you as possible. The obvious first question is, you're a storm chaser. What's wrong with you?
That's a very good question. I ask myself this every day. You know, I will tell you this, the urge or the mental imbalance, you're born with it, you know. People like me, guys who chase storms, even when you're a toddler, you're just like... you're just, like, enraptured by this stuff. And, you know, even when you're a little kid, you just want to be in it. And basically, your whole life, you're just chasing that feeling.
But the hurricane storm chaser and the tornado storm chaser, I mean, they're almost different disciplines, aren't they?
Oh, totally. And I'm really glad you said that, actually, because I think, I always assume lay people don't realize there's a difference, but absolutely. So I think most people, when they think of storm chasers, they think of tornado chasing. That's, I would call it a more popular sport. More folks do it. The hurricane chasers, the guys who just specialize in hurricanes like me, there's not many of us. It's like we're kind of like a more unusual breed. And it, you know, involves a lot more traveling around the world. The thing is, if you want to chase tornadoes, the Midwestern United States is like the world capital.
Right here, baby.
By far. Yeah, exactly. You got it's like that is like our thing. If you want to be like a big hurricane chaser, well, the world capital is not the U.S. It's places like the Philippines and Mexico. There's other places, so you got to travel if you really want to be at the top of the game.
And Josh, you could be on the ground chasing a tornado, but I presume you have to fly into these hurricanes. And anybody who's ever been on a bumpy flight knows what that's like. But what's it like flying into one of these things?
Travel is a very big part of this. So what I try to do, of course, is, you know, especially when I'm traveling to like a remote island, for example, like the Bahamas, is to get in there, get on the ground before the hurricane hits. So there are people who fly planes into hurricanes to measure them. That's not what I do. I'm going in to them to experience them and measure them from on the ground. So the key is to fly in before the weather starts, although there have been a couple of close calls where I've had some very bumpy landings.
Josh, how many really, and I mean really, close calls have you had?
Oh, man, it's a great question. You know, I always say chaser dudes have nine lives, and I've definitely used a few of them. I would say probably, there are five chases in my last 28 years where I was like... during the chase, I had a moment where I was like, okay, this was a mistake. I shouldn't have done this. And if I could have pressed a magic button to just magically transport myself back to L.A. at that moment, I probably would have pressed it.
I don't want to knock the tornado guys because it's incredibly gutsy, but it also can borderline on stupid. There's people who do it who are amateurs who make it hard for the pros. But having said that, there's more science that comes out of hurricane chasing, correct or incorrect?
You know, it comes down to the individual and what their objectives are. And I'll be honest, like, my career, I've evolved over the years. So when I was chasing in my early 20s, I was a full-on, like, just adrenaline junkie, like, just like a dummy. Like, I wasn't doing anything useful. I was just, like, I just wanted to be in it. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I wasn't, like, doing anything useful. My big passion now, it's evolved over the years, is actually collecting data inside the hurricanes. I know that sounds so, like, nerdy. But, you know, you have a lot of hurricanes and typhoons, and a typhoon is a hurricane. That's just what they call it in East Asia.
Sure.
You have a lot of these storms coming ashore in the middle of nowhere, and they might hit a place that has no weather stations or anything on the ground. So my biggest thrill now is getting inside the centers of these storms that are just hitting really remote places and collecting data that otherwise wouldn't exist. So it's like I can provide the missing puzzle piece to scientists as they try to analyze some of these events, and that really thrills me now.
Who are you giving your data to?
The people that buy it.
I freely give it to, you know, I make my living as a TV personality. The data are just for free. I do it because I'm passionate about it. I provide it to the National Hurricane Center, and they will use it, for their analyses, and just to any scientists who want to use it. And, you know, I like my role in the scientific community. As I always say, I am not a scientist. I actually studied history in college. I have, like, a Bachelor of Arts. But I play a role in the scientific community. I'm the hunting dog. I'm going into, or like the special ops, I'm going into dangerous places, remote regions to collect data to bring those back to the scientists so that they can use them and analyze them.
I know we're over time here, and I don't want to step on somebody else's interview that'll be less fun than this. So can we have you back at some point?
I would love that. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks. That's Josh Morgerman.
Can't imagine.
No. And, gee, your question about flying into the eye, you go above.
Oh, that was Dave's.
Dave, your question about G's question.
Sorry.
You fly above the top of the hurricane, and you fly down, as I understand it, you fly down into the eye, and then you have to time the speed of your flight so none of the eye walls catch you, and you still have time to climb up and out of the hurricane. How about that?
Yeah.
If the eye wall catches you, will it crash your plane or the helicopter?
Okay. And that's what I was wondering about, whether he actually flew into those.
Well, I think there is a way to do that, but the way it was described to me is kind of a roller coaster.
I can't even imagine what that's like.
You know, I would just say to him much the same thing I say to you about Kale. There's other jobs.
You know, well, listen, I have to admit, when the tornado sirens were going off last night, I did, like, chase a cloud down my street.
Oh, Dave, you're so brave.
He's a storm chaser.
Yeah.
He's always been a
storm chaser. Just for a block.
Yeah,
just
the block chaser. I ran back to my house and ran in the basement.
My father used to like to go out on the front porch, as we called it in the country, and watch thunderstorms and lightning storms. To have a beer, he'd sit out there, watch it thunder and lightning.
You were telling me, though, once
he ran me over to get back in the house. A ball of lightning, a very rare ball of lightning hit, and he literally mowed me down.
Well,
and then I think he followed it up with, hey, stupid, get in the house. Ah, the warmth. Thanks, everybody. Came out to the Metropolis Theater in Arlington Heights on Saturday. Had a great time. And really nice folks. I spent some time talking to people in the lobby before they left. And a lot of laughs. Now, there was a wardrobe malfunction. So, you know, I come dressed partially for the show. The dressing room is upstairs. So I go upstairs to the dressing room. And all I'm doing is throwing on an Oxford and a sport coat. That's it.
Sassy.
Not hard. Thank you, Dave. So, you know, I throw the shirt on and I do what a grown man would do. I tuck the shirt in and I belt up and throw the sport coat on. And I come downstairs and I go out and do the set. Got a lot of laughs. I don't know, 45 minutes of material or so. And afterwards, I said I went out in the lobby and I greeted people. And as I'm greeting people, a guy comes out and he leans in and he goes, Steve, your fly was open the whole time.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Come on, man.
Get it together. Sheesh.
I still think looking at me and going, come on, man, is the highlight of that story.
Oh, I think so.
Because he couldn't have been more disappointed in me.
Get it together.
Trouble continues in the UK. Boris Johnson's Brexit nightmare continues. Here's the latest. Boris Johnson may have lied to the Queen to get her to sign off on shutting down Parliament.
The Queen.
No! How dare you not tell me the truth? So the problem with that is the Queen can herself throw Boris Johnson out of office without help from anybody. So that's the big story in London this morning. Did Boris Johnson lie to the Queen?
She should hit him, like smack him with her purse.
You know, are you sure I should sign this? The corgis and I are about to watch Wheel of Fortune. So keep an eye on that. It's a big story floating around today as well. And the good news for you is I don't have time to get into the lies the president told at the start of his 9/11 remarks yesterday. But, you know, I have a simple request. 9/11, don't lie. Just for a day, don't lie.
You did a
It's like that Jim Carrey Liar Liar movie.
Oh, yeah.
Just for a day, don't lie.
Oh, that would be great if that happened to him. Yeah. Remember?
Be interesting to see what he's really like. Oh, wait, this is what he's really like.
You did a nice job yesterday.
And not without you and Grzanich and Dave telling me
but
don't.
You not only you were moving and poetic, but you nice. Really the hard part was really for you to hold back and keep true to your word, as you promised the listeners.
It's just so offensive to me that the President of the United States...
Come on.
We'll come back in a moment for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
We continue. Show number 1,449. Dave, look, we're on TV. Aren't you excited?
Hi, CLTV.
I thought you were going to do today shirtless for the ladies watching.
Whoa!
Too cold in here.
That was probably it. Yeah.
I like the reaction, though, in the studio. Yeah.
Woo! The great Bella Gandhi's here. It's been so long since we've seen you.
It's great to be here.
I'm glad you're back. You probably read about the fight Bella and I were having on TMZ. But we worked it out. I still see you everywhere. Everybody wants to talk to you.
Oh, I don't know.
It's been a busy summer.
That. The summer was good. It's busy, but this is the highlight of the summer.
Oh, that's so
early
sweet.
Fall. So
now, on either side of
me.
You have two lovely ladies in different stages of dating.
Wow.
Exhibit A, exhibit B.
I'm on death stage.
You are not.
No.
Death stage.
The fabulous G believes it's over for her, and the fabulous Viv believes that George better step up before she breaks his legs. So who do you want to start with, Doctor?
Oh, not me. Let's start with youth, young, blossoming, hopeful, beautiful Viv.
Well, talk about
production.
Well, talk about from your standpoint as a dating consultant, an instructor, a guru. What do you do about a long distance relationship? That's not easy.
No, it's not easy. Look, dating in the same city is hard enough, right? let's all be honest. Dating, if you live in the same building, is hard enough. And dating across state lines certainly has its challenges. But ultimately, is it possible? Yes. If you have a plan, ultimately, to end up in the same city.
And do we have that plan?
We do. It's in progress. I mean, you know, we haven't really, you know, come to the conclusion of, you know, who's going to move where, but eventually we have talked about that.
I was going to say, same city, as in he's moving to Chicago, because we're not losing
you. I hope he's not listening.
Family,
he's going to think.
Your family cannot have you living in California.
I'm not so much concerned about her family as I am the show.
Like, it's all about me.
Yeah,
Please stay here.
So this is an opportunity for either one of you to pretend you're asking questions for your friends, but ask questions for yourself from Bella Gandhi. So what do you want to know from dating?
Hashtag asking for a friend.
Yes.
So I wanted to talk about how people perceive dating. You know, some people think about the dating stage as an engagement period, and some other people consider it the phase where you're dating someone just to see if you like them enough to make things, you know, exclusive.
I would definitely say in today's day and age, it's B, not A. Dating is, think about it as synonymously with getting to know you. In the beginning, if you're just getting yourself out there, if you're single and listening to this, almost half of adults are single in this country. So you want to think about having a funnel, like a big funnel, and letting good people into the funnel and dating them, getting to know people slowly, and then maybe narrowing it down to your top three candidates and ultimately to the one. That's how I see dating.
Do you have debates like the primaries where the three candidates would come in and they'd have to argue on
the
why
nine
you should...
of them have to come up and argue?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think guys even like to do that anymore. They don't like competition, I think.
Nobody likes competition at the end of the day, right? But you got to make them work for it.
Yeah, that's why smartdatingacademy.com is where you start with this.
So do you think that Viv should put a time frame or a timeline on at what point that they should be in the same city?
They've already been dating
for a year.
End of business hours tomorrow.
EOD mañana.
Right.
It's really couple specific, right? What you both want. Maybe you'll say it's 6 months from now. Like, I really want to get married. I want to have kids. Or maybe you give it 2 years and you do lots of weekend visits and FaceTimes and all of that. But the plan can be whatever works for both of you.
But an ultimatum never works, right? But if you say to somebody, they're just doing an ultimatum and saying to somebody, we both have to get on with our lives. I want it to be together. But if 6 months from now you're not ready to do this, we can't be together. That's not an ultimatum, is it?
I mean, it's like a thinly veiled ultimatum. Right.
Well, so men aren't that smart. So if you play it out that way, I'm thinking it works.
Yeah, usually. But I've seen lots of people put those kinds of ultimatums and quotes out there, and it works. Like, hey, by Christmas, I'd like to have a ring. And if not, we're good. Like, you go your way, I'm going to go my way.
Well, yeah, because you're both entitled to your life.
Yeah.
And as much as you love each other, maybe you're not together.
Exactly. I have told people to put those deadlines and ultimatums out there, thinly veiled or right out there openly.
Right.
I feel like you've always been a proponent of using your brain. Being logical. No, I mean, because
I like
it's
to
so
use
much,
my body.
No, Bella talks about how, you know, people are so driven by that butterfly feeling in their stomach and feeling excitement. And I think she's always talking about, let's weigh that against, like, people should be logical, right?
You should absolutely be logical. And you
but
should
there's no
do
logic
some
in
work.
Love.
Well, that's where 50% of love ends up in divorce, ultimately,
right?
So remember, lust is nature's way of tricking you into attachment, right?
Yes, and love and lust start with the same letter. That's God's practical joke.
Just to confuse us.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. So, but I don't. I interrupted you. So, what's the answer to your question?
So, yeah, you should definitely do a lot of inside work and know who's actually going to make me happy. Especially if you have dating patterns, like, oh, I always attract bad guys, or I'm always dating crazy women. What's the common denominator in that? The common denominator is us. It's you yourself. So, saying, okay, what am I going to change? What am I not going to accept? What red flags have I been looking over like butterflies, right? Butterflies, guys, when your stomach is churning and flipping over, not like the little bit of excitement that you feel before you go on a first date or you're giving a talk on stage, but those, you know, oh my God, is he going to call, blah, blah, blah. Those kinds of butterflies, it's your gut saying there's danger up ahead. It's fear and anxiety.
Ooh. Who is more self-sabotage-ish, men or women?
What a nice word.
Steve, you're always asking questions. Like, he always loves to ask questions like this. Like, you know.
Well, I think it's a fair question.
Right.
Because to get to the core of what you're doing wrong, you have to decide what that could be. And what you're describing to me sounds like self-sabotage.
Self-sabotage. I would say, in my experience, women perform more self-sabotage than men.
Too much thinking?
Too much thinking, bad choices, not having boundaries, not saying, I don't want this, I want that. Yeah, and I think that women accept a lot of crumbs instead of the whole pie.
Yeah, I got to tell you, 100%, because this whole thing that we know what you're thinking, just give it up. We don't.
You have no idea.
No, you need to say it. Say it. And if your policy is, if I have to say it, then you don't understand me, it's not worth it, well, then move on. Because the next guy is going to be the same thing, and you're going to have to say it to him as well.
I think the reason why women fall into that type of overthinking, though, is because, one, it's the biological clock syndrome. I think women have a lot more to lose than men do. And men have a much bigger window in terms of starting families. And I also think that one of the other issues is that it seems to be there are, you know, 10 eligible, brilliant, beautiful, hardworking, career-oriented women for every one, like, man of the same caliber. It just seems that way. But my question to you, though, is, I've had friends that live in L.A. and New York tell me that it's so much better in L.A. and New York.
Oh, perfect tease. Stand by. Let's find out if it's better in L.A. and New York. Nice job by you, G. What a setup.
Oh, that's why I'm here.
9:22. What's coming up at 9:30?
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Every time I move, I lose when I look, I'm in. And every time I turn around, I'm back in love. I can mix the emotions.
Finally, Steve Cochran Show, all-time top 10. Wow, this is up to number 3. It moves around, as you know.
Sometimes I just don't know.
Back in love again. Is this LTD? Yeah.
Every time I turn around, I'm back in love.
Great song.
I see it igniting something in you. Little flames.
Listen,
in your...
I'm a black entertainer. It's the music of my people.
Oh, Steve, I hate when you
Steve. I don't know why you hate it. Why are you holding me down? You're like the man. All right, so just before the break, G asked a great question. People say it's easier in New York and L.A. That's nonsense, isn't it?
Well, particularly, I would say my friends who are in their like mid to late 30s, 40s, and 50s, they say that it's better there.
Why would
than
it be
here.
Better in New York or
I don't know. They tell me that because Chicago still has the kind of that wholesome Midwestern vibe, and that people stay unmarried longer in L.A. and New York. So there's a bigger
eligible pool. So they're more bitter in L.A. and New York?
But there's more bitter. There are more eligible people that are bitter.
The pools and older. Are definitely bigger in L.A., New York,
what's
just
population?
Like the population. Yeah. But I'll tell you what. We have lots of clients from L.A. and New York, and they fly to Chicago to work with us. They want to move to Chicago by the end of their 2 days with us. They're like, the guys here are so nice. I love it here. So I think this could be the grass is always greener.
Okay. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. Of course, Chicago's better.
Here's the difference between men in New York and L.A. In L.A., men will tell you they don't want to do it. They want to get to know you. In New York, they'll just tell you they want to do it. So at least in Chicago, you get a little courting.
There's that wholesomeness.
Yes. All right, Viv, again, for a friend. Any question?
Want to tell George to move here?
Sure, absolutely. Let's get George on the line.
Explain what Smart Dating Academy does for people.
So we help people to get out there and date the right kinds of people that are going to make you happy. And so you don't end up in that 50% divorce rate or that disappointed bucket. We help you navigate online dating and real life dating so that it's fun, you feel safe, and it's a good time. There are tons of people in this city and suburbs, guys, that are out there and single. And if you're just getting bad date after bad date, look and say, okay, what's going on here? What can I change up to get better results?
Do you feel like people don't approach one another anymore? I don't feel like people go up to other folks, person to person, face to face, to say, hi, I'm so-and-so, or can I buy you a drink?
Well, it's not safe like it is online.
Is online that much safer?
I think people feel more comfortable texting somebody versus walking up to them, right? I can text someone, and if they don't text me back, it doesn't feel as quote-unquote rejection-y as if I walk up to someone and he's like, ugh, get out of here, right? So, so yeah, I try. And here's the problem. Everybody's looking at their phones. Everybody's got AirPods or earbuds. And yeah, even if I wanted to tell this, you know, lovely girl that she had this gorgeous dress on 2 days ago, I couldn't because she had AirPods on and she was looking at her phone. I'm like, well, there goes your compliment.
There's also something that I see, and it's not just from me because, you know, I frighten people.
you do.
Sandberg tells me it's my face. I see a thing now where, and maybe it's because they're locked into their phones or whatever, but there's a startledness when you approach people like there wasn't before.
Right.
Like paying a compliment or something. Go.
Like, what do you want to sell me?
Yeah, what are you, a creep?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so be open, right?
Be open. You're ultimately, remember, the goal of being on your phone and being on a dating app is to what? It's to meet a person. And most people, if you survey 99% of people, their ideal way to meet their partner is through a connection in real life. And yet, we're looking down. We're plugging our ears. Look up. Get off your phones. Say hi to people. Smile. You want to hear 3 seconds of eye contact and a smile. That's a good invitation
That's
to someone.
Lock.
That's a lock, right? If you do it, 3 seconds, it feels like an eternity, but it definitely says, come over and talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, I like that.
Yeah, but you got to smile. Otherwise, you look like a creepy stalker.
Well, Viv, you have that. Viv smiles all the time. We worry she's not getting enough oxygen.
She has a gorgeous smile.
The inner glow just comes right out.
Do you know immediately, like, does it take 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes a day? When do you know that, like, somebody's creepy or somebody's good for you or not good for
you? Well, creepy would be if they, you know, ask you to call them daddy.
I shouldn't say creepy.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there a 3-date rule anymore?
There is no 3-day rule. It was invented by some guy 5,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's no...
Org from a cave.
You were just bored.
Yeah.
It's right when it's right.
It's right when it's right, but give something time. Even if you're not feeling chemistry right away, that doesn't mean you throw this person back to the pond and look for someone else. We have this fallacy that we should feel it instantly, immediately, and we throw a bunch of good people away. Take it slow. And if a first date's good and fine, even though it wasn't riveting, give the person a second date. And if that's a little better, give them the third date. This is how a lot of great love stories are authored, ultimately. Slow your roll.
I'll let you go on this. Soulmates. It's a nice idea, but it's a Hallmark card, right?
Yeah. There's many lids to your pot. So take that in its positive way, right? There's many different people out there that, you know, that'll be good for you, right? Love always comes in an unexpected package.
Lids to a pot. You just got to hope the stove works.
Right.
That's exactly right.
Could be a red lid. Could be a glass lid. Could be a lid with a couple dents in it, but it still fits your pot.
And look at it this way. Larry King got divorced again, and he's been married 7 or 8 times. There's always people out there.
He's a man.
Somebody, if Larry King found somebody to marry him 7 or 8 times, come on.
9 will be the charm.
Yeah, that's the one he's looking for. This last one, he just needed some me time.
It's like a baseball team.
Yeah,
9
exactly.
Times.
SmartDatingAcademy.com.
Yeah.
Nice to see you, Bill.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I want to say hi to Rami Abdullah, assistant manager at DXL in Naperville. I was carrying around his business card, and I can't remember if I said hi to him before. He's a listener. His
That's
dad listens.
Hilarious.
Yes, you actually did. You've done it every day this week.
I have?
Yes.
Dave, man, am I getting forgetful.
So funny.
Well, you know, you just got to take care of people. What do you know? Anyway, I like Rami. Jeremy Calton's a head coach of your Chicago Blackhawks. And strangely enough, he called me a couple nights ago, Dave. He said, I can't play when we're in Prague.
Oh, is that right?
I figure I was welcome to play since I was making the trip. Not so much.
No, really? But you guys are still going to hang out together.
I don't know. He said he's at a different hotel, and I said, which hotel? And the line went dead. So, hey, Coach, how are you?
Good morning. I missed you guys, too.
Well, nice to talk to you. How's the summer been?
Great.
Anything fun? Anything fun? What'd you do? Did you take the kids anywhere?
Yeah. We, back to Calgary for a few weeks, and actually took my oldest with me on the drive back, so that was fun. A little road trip.
Ah, cool.
And we got back. We've been in Chicago for the whole family for a few weeks, enjoying Chicago, what's left of the Chicago summer. So it's been good.
You know, I'm a grandfather now. I got a 3.5-year-old granddaughter and a 6-week-old grandson. And it's the greatest thing. And I didn't know it'd be the greatest thing until it happened. And it turns out it's the greatest thing.
Are you doing all the night shifts? Are you taking the night shifts?
That's the point. It's fun. I'm not doing the night shifts. So, do your parents or her parents do anything that annoys you? Because I'm making a list of things I can do to annoy my son and daughter-in-law.
Definitely not. They're amazing.
Yeah. So, well, you'd say the same thing about me.
That's right.
You were just concerned they're listening now on the stream. 2019 Chicago Blackhawks Training Camp Festival celebrates hockey's return to Chicago. You're going to see all your favorite stars and the new offseason acquisitions. I mean, man, Stan Bowman's been very busy. And on paper, Coach, we look good.
It's exciting. We're going to have a very competitive camp, I believe. We have a lot of players who have the potential to make the team, and that's excellent for us. We need depth. I think I've said to you before that, you know, I think to go on a run, you need to be 27, 28 players deep. So there's competition for the guys who are going to break camp, go to Berlin with us, Prague. And then it's also even the guys, there's some guys who get sent to Rockford who, long-term, they're still going to be a part of it. So we'd like to see who those guys are who can help us down the road. So I'm excited to see how all that shakes out.
Do you have in your mind an approximate number of how many spots are open on this team or up for grabs? Or is that kind of dangerous if you put a number on it because somebody might surprise you?
Right. I think we got to have an open mind. I don't want to pick winners before they have the chance to show what they can bring. So we're going to try and the guys we feel are close to playing for us, we're going to try and get them in some games and also put them in a position to succeed, to show what they have to offer. That's, I think, a big part of what we're trying to accomplish here in camp.
How will this rather rigorous travel schedule here going to Europe affect how you do things in training camp? Will it accelerate things, or is it just going to be business as usual?
Well, I think it will accelerate. We got to make some decisions relatively early because we're going over to Europe, and we can't bring 30, you know, bring 25, and then we have to, you know, have the final roster cut down a couple days before the season starts. So it's very important early on that we've sent this message to the players, like, don't waste any time. If you want to show you deserve to be in the team, I think everyone's going to get a chance to get in the first few games, and a couple guys probably multiple times. So you got to prove yourself right away because, you may run out of time.
The goalie situation for fans looks great. For a coach, it's a decision-making kind of thing. I know it's Crawford's job, but you got a great number two here who could start for most of the National Hockey League. Is there any ego managing that goes on with that, or do they come in understanding that?
I think they're both of them they're both very humble but competitive, and I'm sure they want to play as much as possible. But for a coach, it's a great situation to be in. We feel really confident we're going to get, terrific performances night in and night out from these guys. And I think ultimately everyone just wants to win. And so when you have good goaltending, it puts you in a good spot.
Somebody asked me an interesting question this week, and I forgot to bring it up to Stan. But when Stan makes deals, as busy as he's been this summer, I mean, I know you're in meetings and you know what's possible, but you don't know what's done until it's done. Does he call you first? Are you the first guy to find out, I got this guy now?
I doubt that, but what has been really good, I think, the management group and you know, the coaching staff, where we've been heavily involved with, you know, making a plan. How do we want the team to play? Which players do we think might fit in? And it's been really collaborative, which has been, you know, when we look at the team now, everyone feels really comfortable and excited with the changes that, we've been able to make. So I think it was a really enjoyable experience, and everyone's really invested in, and believes in what we're doing.
Season starts tomorrow. Who's your first line defenseman?
I think we'll let it play out, but we got a former Norris Trophy winner. That's a pretty good place to start.
Yeah. And still has more miles on his legs than anybody, and it's tougher than he's ever been. This weekend's going to be great. The free outdoor street festival opens at 8 a.m. Sunday. Includes appearances from Blackhawks alumni, live music, entertainment. Fans get to see their favorite Hawks back on the ice, and the new guys, too. Gates to the United Center open at 9. First 10,000 fans who get to enter the building get a Patrick Kane bobblehead inspired by the 10th anniversary of the 2010 championship. And all seating in the United Center is general admission. Parking for the event's going to be free. Tickets are required for the scrimmage portion of the festival, and they're $5. $5.
Can't beat that.
Can't get anything for $5.
Nope.
Can't get a coffee for $5. And you can get it at Blackhawks.com. So thanks to Jay and John and Rocky and everybody with the Blackhawks. Coach, it's going to be a great year. I'll see you Sunday.
See y'all soon.
All right.
Thank you.
Right.
Thanks. See, I think this would have been your opportunity, because maybe he's not going to play you in Prague because he hasn't seen you, but you could be out there in the scrimmage on Sunday, Steve, and that could be your chance.
He said something about being a hitting dummy.
Well, yeah, somebody's got to do it.
Part of the team.
Yeah.
Part of the team. You think if I showed up in Lederhosen, I could play in Germany?
Yes.
How would that look, Lederhosen and ice skates? Is that a hot look?
Very much so.
I thought
so. Yeah.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Helpful texter from the 773 says there is such a thing as Lederhosen hockey uniforms. And texted me a hockeynews.com story that was posted. The Red Bull Munich team has an awesome Lederhosen look.
You should actually buy yourself some Lederhosen while you're there. Like, seriously. Just that way you're prepared for Oktoberfest and everything when you're back
here.
What
if I got, like, a German sidecar helmet, like for the motorcycle sidecar, and I wore that as my hockey helmet with the Lederhosen?
Huh? It's a strong look.
A strong look is right. Bill is in with Dane Neal today, and Bill will join us in a second. I don't know if he'll let Dane talk. Frankly, I wouldn't. There's a question, Dave, about the Blackhawks preseason games. Are they going to be on the radio?
They will be on the radio. They will, of course, be on WGNRadio.com, streaming on your WGN Radio app. Mm-hmm. And then we will air, because of conflicts with the White Sox and some other sports events, we will move the other games. They will be carried by our friends at ESPN 1000 and okay. 560 AM.
IND. Yeah, the
IND will be.
They still call that the answer? Because, by the way, I work there. It's more of a question than an answer. We'll come back with Bill next on 720 WGN. Got some real trouble in the studio right now.
Never seen anything like this, Steve. Have you?
G asked Bill Leff for an Altoid.
Yeah, gave, curiously strong, let me point out.
And gave G his tin of Altoids. Yep. When he opened the tin again, what happened?
They were all gone.
Because G took all the Altoids.
All of them.
No, no, listen.
Every one of them.
What, are there about 50 in there? When
50 or 60.
There were only two halves of an Altoid, so I
you
thought
say.
It was okay to take them because that would equal one whole Altoid.
When we go to Altoid court over this, you're going to have to prove
it. I felt guilty
because the entire pack is gone.
The tin references multiple. It says Altoids.
Right. There used to be
implying you should take
them. They're all gone.
And here's the bad news. Bill just had a liver and onion sandwich about 10 seconds ago.
I just assumed, honestly, people that carry Altoids usually have a whole case of them, like more of them.
So I had a whole case of them.
No,
they're all gone.
Like multiple, like a Costco size.
I think the shock really here is that Bill and I thought you were a nicer person.
I thought you were so much nicer. And I, you know, I went to the Richard Dawson School of Broadcasting, which is you always give a big smooch to your guests.
Yeah,
how can I do that now?
It's a shock to all of us, I'm going to be honest with you. Don't worry, Bill. I'll have a strong talk with her after the show.
Curiously strong?
Curiously strong.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
What's coming up today?
Oh, how about Chris Hardwick coming on with us?
Come on.
Yeah, I'm not
kidding.
What time? 10-ish.
Okay. 6 is at your clocks.
Yeah.
All right.
Right around 10 o'clock.
He's going to be on my show, this show, tomorrow.
Yeah, he's on to promote his appearance on your show tomorrow.
So could you give me all the questions you ask him so I could ask them in the same order?
So we're going to get the really tired Chris that's already done the show?
No, you'll get a seasoned
veteran.
More
experienced.
Yeah.
Tired, angry,
bitter. He'll know what he's doing tomorrow.
Is Dane going to be this much of a problem throughout the entire show or just right
Dane
now?
Doesn't think you like him.
I like Dane a lot.
Bill, it says on my rundown, calming influence today, Bill.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
Well, I mean, the whole thing really got off to a bad start with the Altoid incident.
It really did. It really did.
By the way, I was in a band called Altoid Incident, but you probably knew that.
I just figured you would have another case of them somewhere.
Yeah, they stopped making them.
It's a shocking movie.
He's a collector. No. He has one every day.
You know what I think this is? This is a throwback to your time on TV where all the talent got whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
Didn't care about others.
That's how TV works.
Man.
Not radio. Radio people are nicer.
Right. I had to trade one of my daughters in just to get this tin of Altoid.
Can I go to the CVS down here and buy you another pack?
No, Dave. It's better to
doesn't
just
matter. Now Chris Hardwick's on hold. He'll know it's bad breath.
Yeah, he'll know.
Right, here's Bill.
Chicago
Sorry,
Stories.
Bill, on behalf of
no,
the Steve
you,
show,
you did all you could. Chicago Stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Hey, smart speaker users, get your own Altoids. And then say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.